You're listening to The Striking Corner, your source for Muay Thai and kickboxing news worldwide.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Striking Corner. I am your host, Eric Rivera, and it is actually Monday, February 16th. This is episode 14 of our podcast. It is right after Valentine's Day, which is always a very, very stressful time for me because it actually happens to be the same weekend as my anniversary and my wife's birthday, guys. So I've been very, very busy this weekend, but actually glad it's over, even though I had a great time and everything went well. And, you know, so it's a little bit more of an important holiday for me than, let's say, most people. So with that said, we're here with my good friend and sidekick here on the podcast, Vinny Scotto. Say what's up, Vin.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? Thank you, Eric, for the introduction. And also, we have another special guest with us today. It's Eric Haycraft from Real Fighters in Kentucky. How's it going, Eric?
It's going well, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Eric. So yeah, man, you know, we want to get to it. So you are the owner and head coach at Real Fighters, which is in Louisville, Kentucky, correct?
Correct. That's correct.
Okay. So a lot of people, and let's go straight into that subject, is a lot of people know Muay Thai, which is the traditional, obviously, the style of Thai boxing from Thailand. But then a lot of people have this idea of, they call it Dutch Muay Thai, which might be a misnomer. Can you give us a little bit of a definition, a primer of what do you think the fundamental differences are between the styles that are Dutch kickboxing and Muay Thai?
I think it's easier not to just even talk about Dutch Muay Thai or Dutch kickboxing as opposed to Muay Thai, but really to break down Muay Thai as it exists in Thailand and Muay Thai as it exists everywhere else in the world. So once you leave Thailand, you're going to get lots of different flavors of Muay Thai. When you look at the USA, you've got a lot of people here that call themselves traditional Muay Thai stylists, but it's a very different style of Muay Thai than you find in Thailand. If you go to Russia, they do, you know, full rules Muay Thai fights, but it's a very different style of Muay Thai. Same in Japan. And the same thing happened, of course, in Holland. And I mean, those changes are going to exist because there were other martial sports that existed in those countries long before they found Muay Thai. So those all influenced. You know, most people in the USA that are doing Muay Thai now, except for like the latest generation of newcomers, they all came from some other kind of martial arts in the past. You know, I'm 41 years old. I didn't start with Muay Thai. I started with Kung Fu. And that's a pretty common story for a lot of people in the USA. So that brings a lot of different flavors of martial arts experiences to the instructors that exist in each of those countries. Mm-hmm. When you look at Holland has a history of martial arts, of full contact martial arts fighting. So in the 60s and the 70s, Holland was one of the powerhouse countries in both judo and Kyokushin karate. And they were world champions. I mean, they would go to Japan and they would win the world championships. As far as judo in the Olympics, the Dutch have tons of gold medals and silver medals and bronze medals. Mm-hmm. So because judo and Kyokushin took them to Japan all the time, they also jumped on that first wave of karate fighters in Japan that switched to kickboxing. So the first kickboxing that came back to Europe came back through Holland, through the Japanese karate scene. And I'm sure everybody's heard all the stories back in the day of the karate fighters that would travel to Thailand and challenge the Thais. And then the Thais went to Japan to fight the karate fighters there. And all that stuff really happened. And in that process, the Japanese started making their own kickboxing sport. Mm-hmm. And the Dutch brought that back to Holland. And they actually, in my opinion, perfected it, because modern kickboxing is very much, pretty much just Dutch kickboxing. But if you fast forward a few years from that point, eventually the challenges started taking the Dutch to Thailand. Mm-hmm. And then you get a whole crop of guys that were fighting Muay Thai in Thailand. So yeah, it's Muay Thai, because I think none of us would argue that Ramon Dekkers was a Muay Thai fighter. He's also Dutch. And his Muay Thai did not look like a Thai fighter's Muay Thai. Mm-hmm. So he has his own flavor of Muay Thai. It's his Dutch Muay Thai. Mm-hmm. The system is still the same as Dutch kickboxing, but he's fighting Muay Thai. So it's all just semantics. You know, you can really overly dissect those thoughts. But as long as all the guys are fighting the same sport in the ring, it really doesn't matter what you want to call it.
Okay.
So you think that the modern form of kickboxing is actually a combination of all different martial arts put together?
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's definitely Kyokushin karate has almost every technique available that you see in regular kickboxing now, minus boxing. So of course they had to introduce boxing, and of course there's no, they, you know, they don't elbow, and they didn't have the extensive clinch game. So you add in the Muay Thai, but yeah, it's modern kickboxing is a lot of different martial arts brought together.
Mm-hmm. So here's something I kind of want to interject, and it's kind of related, but it's kind of moving on from that point. And I think it goes more into, we're going to go more into the political aspect of it and why this happens, and maybe you can shine some light on it as well. Because what I think is it happens a lot is we see a lot of confusion now of the different styles that there are. Because when I was growing up fighting, and Vinny as well, we had, well, we also, funny story is I see that you also started with Kung Fu. Vinny and I also came from Kung Fu backgrounds, fighting in Sanxiao. So you had Sanxiao rules, which are pretty much like kickboxing plus Muay Thai plus Kung Fu plus takedowns and judo throws. I mean, yeah, so that whole idea of it, modern kickboxing being a style that brings in tons of different martial arts is really true. However, when we go to different tournaments, and I know you take your students to different tournaments, you have modified kickboxing rules or modified Muay Thai rules, international kickboxing, K1 style, glory style, full Muay Thai rules. You have American kickboxing or full contact rules. Why did all these things happen? I mean, are there really differences? Why have we not sort of brought in one specific style to say, this is Dutch kickboxing, which I think is going on with Glory now, which is, this is the epitome of Dutch kickboxing. You're seeing this now, and this is full Thai rules. I mean, it really should be two separate rules, and that's it. Am I correct?
Yeah, for sure. But you got to look a little bit at the history. So at least as it pertains to the USA, because for me, the USA is the biggest trouble spot in the world for confusion of kickboxing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, all that stuff was going on in Japan. And the Dutch were coming to Japan and bringing kickboxing back to Europe. The USA independently had started to develop their own style of kickboxing. And it came from a little bit different arena. It came from point karate fighters. Mm-hmm. The point karate fighters, back then, I don't really think they called it point karate. They were karate fighters, and there was a little bit more contact allowed. Mm-hmm. But those guys started to create a sport where they could throw on some boxing gloves and jump in a ring and do their basically the same, you know, all the kicks above the waist, and American kickboxing was born. And as that got more and more popular, and we started to create some national stars in that, the convergent evolution of those sports in Europe and Japan and over in America, they started to recognize each other. So there became a point where a guy like Benny Urquidez had a reason to go and challenge in Japan against the Japanese fighters and eventually against some European fighters and even some Thai fighters. So there became these crossovers. The big problem in those early days of North American kickboxing was they didn't allow low kicks. They didn't allow knees. And the Japanese fighters were not doing Muay Thai. So they had low kicks and knees. And they tried to create some common ground for all of these athletes to meet. And the WKA was formed, and they started a meet in the middle division, and it was pretty much kickboxing with no clinching, with no knees, but with low kicks. Mm-hmm. And it was supposed to be a nice, happy meeting place.
So that's what? That would be the international rules, pretty much?
International rules. You got it. International rules. And as that expanded, what happened was they started creating world titles in, you know, the above the waist divisions and the international rules divisions. And then, of course, you know, Muay Thai divisions that had titles. And there were, it was just a hodgepodge of different styles, all with their belts to be had. Mm-hmm. And the sanctioning bodies that regulated all of that stuff back in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, they're really the same sanctioning bodies that are here today. The WKA, the ISKA, those guys were the big powerhouses back then. They're still around. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, politics or, you know, old members that never wanted to let go of the past, they never came around and acknowledged that most of those divisions weren't necessary anymore or needed. And they didn't, you can still find fights that are under international rules. You can still find tournaments that offer American kickboxing rules. And it's really difficult when the guys that run those sanctioning bodies trace their roots back to certain sports and they don't want to move forward. And I think that's why you still see so many different rule divisions out there.
All right. Well, yeah, that totally makes sense because I remember, like I said, when I fight, it's crazy because that's why, like now, I guess you go to these tournaments, you go to these events and you have to have rule meetings because everybody has a different sort of interpretation of what's going to be going on in the fight. you know, and then the ref has to basically explain what's been going on. And so somebody might do a completely legal technique because that's what they interpret to be legal. And somebody's like, no, you can't do that. You know, you can't grab a leg and sweep. You can't, we're not going to count that. Those aren't points, or those are points. Or if I kick the body and the person moves, well, that's going to be a point. But if it kicks the person's arm, then, you know, it's not going to be, you know, there's so many different types of things. And I think, you know, we have all these arguments now. You see it happen all the time of the judging in Muay Thai or the judging in kickboxing and, you know, or even in MMA and all that, which is like, people that may not know the sport well are the ones that are judging it, or they might not be that they don't know the sport well, but they have a completely different interpretation of what kickboxing or Muay Thai is. And I think it's all those different rule sets. And I just don't, and as you said, and I think it's interesting that you brought that up, and I kind of want to elaborate on that, is you brought up that the United States seems to be the one that has the most problems in that arena. And yeah. You know, why do you think that is? Why do you think they haven't evolved from there? Is it politics? Is it, you know?
It's experience and politics combined. So when you go to Europe and you go to an event, typically the people that are running the event are people that have been in the sport for many, many years. And the officials that they bring in are people that came from the sport for many, many years. That's not the case in the USA. In the USA, more than not, the people that are reffing and judging, they may have some experience in the sport, but none of them extensive. Mm-hmm. And most of them not in the sport that they're actually judging or reffing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, most of the Muay Thai judges and refs that are actively controlling fights and outcomes of fights never competed in Muay Thai. Most never even trained in Muay Thai. They might have came from an American kickboxing background. And it never became a necessity or a requirement in America that people understood all those rules. I mean, MMA has an even bigger problem. I mean, think of how many judges there are across athletic commissions in the country that never trained MMA or know anything about it. There's boxing judges that are then handed over the job to be an MMA judge for that night. And that happens the same with kickboxing. Everywhere I go, I see it's completely confusing. So you got guys that are A, responsible for controlling and judging fights that they don't really appreciate, care about. I mean, I kind of have always been the guy that's a little bit, I want to hold the feet to the fire of the people that are judging my fighter. And I will often go directly to the judges and have a conversation with those guys. And sometimes I'll ask questions that are not even about the fights, just who's your favorite fighter? You know, what events did you watch this year? And you would be amazed how many people say crazy, crazy answers. You know, a fighter that hasn't been around for 50 years, or they didn't watch any events because they can't find any on TV. Those aren't the people that I think should be in charge of those things. You know, yeah.
So their favorite fighter was like Don the Dragon Wilson, or
that's been an answer. There's been some other, you know, less well known guys. Yeah. You know, if you go to the TBA tournament, I mean, almost everybody there says Chai Sirisu's their favorite fighter of all time.
Oh,
wow. And I was like, really? How many of his fights did you see? And they're like, yeah, because there's none to see. Nobody's ever seen any of his fights.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean he wasn't an amazing fighter and he can't be your favorite fighter, but it strikes me as odd that of all of the active fighters in the history of the sport, one that you never could see fight, even on YouTube, is the guy is your favorite fighter.
Correct.
Yeah. So there's something missing in that equation.
Okay, so with all that said, is there, I mean, obviously we're not going to have a be-all, end-all solution in one podcast, but what do you think is something that we can do to sort of make that shift towards, I guess, having one specified rule set or better judging? I mean, where are we moving in the right direction, or do you think it's not moving in the right direction, and how do we fix that?
I think it's a two steps forward, one step backwards type of thing. Mm-hmm. We're definitely making progress, but it's going to be slow progress, and we're going to keep falling on our face because we don't have the patchwork laid out, people with deep, deep roots in the sport. Mm-hmm. We just don't have it. It just doesn't exist. So if you look at like when you go to Europe and you go to any of the big gyms, and I always like to compare Europe more than I want to compare Thailand, because if we're going to talk about real Muay Thai, nobody's ever going to compete with real Muay Thai and the standard anywhere else in the world. no matter how good your gym is, and you're gonna have, you can even have amazing fighters, but you're never gonna replicate that anywhere else. Mm-hmm. In Europe, though, they have a lifestyle a lot more like we do, and they go to, they have jobs and school, and they have training times like we have, and classroom structures in a martial arts school like we have. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot easier for me, I think, to set our sights on at least catching up with those guys before we really say we're going to try to catch up with the guys that are even further away.
So, yeah, this actually brings me into another subject. And with the way that the class structure is here in the United States, I've trained in Thailand. I know you have as well. That you go to Thailand and obviously it's basically a set time. I mean, nobody does anything else but train. So it's a set time in the morning to train for a couple of hours. You wake up, you run, you come back from the run, you do some bag work until the pad holder calls you up to the ring, then you hit the pads, then you do clinch work or you do some more bag work, and then you go to sleep or you rest, you eat, and then you do it all over again. You know, there's no structure in the sense of it being a classroom setting. So obviously, I do agree with you that we can't replicate that. And that's something that I think I've slowly sort of come to realize because, and Vinny will touch on this too. He has a question that he wanted to ask you, but it's also about, you know, we're so set. I mean, at first when I started Muay Thai, I was so set on being traditional. When I came back from Thailand, I wanted to do everything exactly the same. And I think a lot of people want to do that. And then I've slowly realized as I've gone along and trained more people and fought in different events and talked with so many people that it's very different, that you can't replicate that here. So with what I'm saying with that is, do you think that the style, like let's say Dutch kickboxing, do you think that's sort of the reason why, I don't know, I don't know if it's absolutely true, but I've kind of noticed is that more people are sort of gravitating towards that style, towards Dutch kickboxing. Yeah.
It's tricky. I mean, let me retouch on the Muay Thai part. Mm-hmm. You have to also look at what the bulk of real Muay Thai is in Thailand. It's mm-hmm. It's not like a bunch of recreational people were deciding searching Google and said, man, I'd like to get into Muay Thai. And then they drive over to a camp and they take a gym tour and they sit down with the salesperson and they sell them on a membership to the Thai camp. The fighters that are in those Thai camps are pretty much owned by the Thai camps. They're poor kids. They're property of the camp. They have to be there if they want to make a living. Mm-hmm. That's not the case for Muay Thai anywhere else in the world. Anywhere else in the world, it's, you know, Johnny can decide to show up whatever night he wants to show up. He's not owned by the camp. He can choose never to fight if he wants to. He can choose to fight twice if he wants to. You know, I remember training at the camp one day and one of the fighters was injured, and they told him he had a fight. He just kind of shrugged his head, you know, and I had the translator explain to me, like, he's like, well, he's hurt. What's going to happen? Well, he's going to fight, because otherwise he doesn't make any money. Mm-hmm. And that would never happen over here. That could never happen mm-hmm. over here. So you have to understand the biggest difference between those two things. We're doing a recreational sport. We still have plenty of serious athletes here, but it's not so much a recreational thing. It's not like Taekwondo over there for kids.
Yeah.
It's a lot of times the kids that are training in a camp, that was a better outlet than some far worse path they could be going down. So when you talk about European kickboxing as the structure, the reason Dutch kickboxing is set up the way it is back to that Kyokushin roots thing. So all over Hall, in every city, there were lots of Kyokushin gyms, karate schools. And they were, you know, the traditional dojos. Everybody would walk in, they'd why, or they would bat, not why, but they would bow in, and then they would os, just like in traditional karate. Mm-hmm. And they had a structure of training drills and partner drills. If you've ever seen how Kyokushin trains, the guys pair up, and then they start to kick and punch the crap out of each other, which is pretty much what Dutch kickboxing is. The guys pair up, and they start to punch and kick the crap out of each other. Mm-hmm. And because the Kyokushin style is so much based on hard, hard low kicks and hard body punching, because in those rules you can't punch to the face, Dutch kickboxing is also notorious for hard body shots and hard low kicks. Mm-hmm. So it was the structure for the classes is very similar to what they already had in place. So all of the karate schools essentially became kickboxing gym. So most of all of the guys, the big forerunners of kickboxing and Muay Thai in Holland, were also Kyokushin champions first. When you look at the USA, the biggest problem for us is martial arts in mass came up as a non-contact thing. When I did Kung Fu, we didn't hit each other at all. Mm-hmm. It was totally pretend slapping and touching. And we would do other martial arts tournaments where there was no contact allowed at all. Kyokushin never caught on in the USA because it was too hard. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was too hard. It was too late to the table. Taekwondo got here first, and the Taekwondo that came to America was way watered down from the Taekwondo in Korea. They want everybody to be able to do it and feel not threatened and not feel like they're going to get hurt. And if you take out all contact, you increase the amount of people you can have. Everybody feels like they can do it. You can have your newspaper can have a story about the 80-year-old grandma that got her black belt. Those happen in real contact sport. I mean, there's not 80-year-old ladies in my fighter group. So because you got a sport that is so contact-oriented, it takes, for people that have martial arts experience, reprogramming. You have to get them to understand your body can adapt to real contact constantly. And all the things that you were told about, you know, you're going to hurt each other, you're going to damage your body, you're going to do all these things, it's not necessarily true if you train correctly.
It's true.
A hard sell. It's a really hard sell for most people. For me, every day from the first day somebody comes in, they understand they're signed up for a contact sport. And if they have no martial arts experience at all, they don't know anything else to compare it to. Someone comes to me from another gym, they think we're crazy, but it just it takes some reprogramming.
Well, it's the same kind of like, you know, if you have someone from a different style, you have to break old habits and create new ones.
That's right. That's right.
Absolutely. So now, one question I have is, obviously, it seems more like the Dutch style has come from Kyokushin karate and, you know, more so than Muay Thai. But for the modern kickboxing styles, do you think that they should keep the traditions alive? Like, do you think that in the Dutch style, they should keep the Kyokushin karate traditions alive, and for gyms that are, say, you know, Muay Thai or a modern form of Muay Thai here in the States, do you think they should keep the Thai traditions alive?
No, I think this. I think that if we're talking about kickboxing, just the all-encompassing sport of kickboxing, where you draw on lots of different martial arts, no, I don't think you should. I don't think we need to have every Dutch kickboxer walk out in a gi, because frankly, they're not training in gis back home. It's not Muay Thai. So you don't need to seal the ring and come into the ring in a monkon. It's not Muay Thai. You're not fighting Muay Thai. If you're going to fight Muay Thai, part of Muay Thai, you need to keep that intact. If you're going to fight Kyokushin, you're going to show up in a gi and you're going to bow in and do all the traditional things that go with that. Those martial arts and sports in their own entity, yeah, for sure. I mean, because it's not tradition, it's normal then. Mm-hmm. But once you cross it over into this big mixing pot, I don't think you necessarily need all of those things. I think it becomes a distraction more than anything else.
Okay. Touching on that, the growth of, let's say, the growth of Glory, how Glory has gotten so big right now in the States and continues to grow. Dutch kickboxing obviously is at the forefront when you look at something like Glory. But then you also have, you know, you have your Lion Fight, which is focused on Muay Thai tradition. But so what I look at, as somebody who loves, I mean, I'll tell you the truth. I mean, I absolutely love the tradition. I've always loved the tradition of Muay Thai because that's what I grew up with. That's what I trained always with. And I went to Thailand and I fell in love with Muay Thai before I knew Dutch kickboxing. So all the traditions of the Mongkon and the Prajet and the, you know, sealing the ring and the music and everything like that. Now I see, obviously, now at first I would tell you, Eric, I was really, really bothered when I would see that, like, at Lion Fight that I was hearing at first used to have the music and, you know, people would do Y-Cruise and seal the ring. And at first it really bothered me when I heard the stories that they had to take things out because they wanted it to be more, you know, friendly for TV and for the regular viewer. So it bothered me because I was like, you know, I was so in love with the tradition. And as I've grown in the sport, as I've gotten older and realized, you know, that business is business and, you know, that you have to do, if you want things to grow, you're going to have to make some certain sacrifices. I've kind of toned that down a little bit. I see that, obviously, I think Glory in a lot of ways, like I always tell, I have said on this podcast, is I think it really sort of fits right in with the American psyche, because it kind of takes away a lot of those things that will be sort of very different for Americans to understand, and they probably won't latch on to it. And then with Lion Fight, I guess they want to push Muay Thai and traditional Muay Thai and full Thai rules, but they have to get rid of certain things in order for, due to time constraints, and maybe they want to attract regular viewers. And one thing that stuck out to me huge, and this is something that you actually said to me a couple of years ago, was, and I remember repeating it to a couple of people, was, that you feel that part of the growth has to be, you do have to remove those things in some cases, because let's say the common person, the common fan, the fan that just wants to see two people go and beat the crap out of each other and get a beer and watch it, they don't want or necessarily want to be talked down to or spoken to like they have to know this and be culturally educated in order to enjoy their fight. You know,
I think that your typical sports fan is not looking for a cultural lesson.
Correct.
Especially American sports fans.
Mm-hmm.
And look how long it took this country to embrace soccer.
Correct.
I mean, and it was my father, when I was young, my father told me that's a communist sport. We don't watch it. You know, jokingly, but not jokingly, you know, he didn't understand it, and he didn't want to learn it, and he didn't want to try to figure it out. And it was all these other, all the great players had foreign names and from foreign countries. And, you know, it took that long for it to really catch on in the United States. And now you're going to take another sport that is really easy to understand. Fighting is super simple sport to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Two guys are going to get in the ring and somebody's going to try to hurt the other person. But if you start attaching all these cultural things, it's an instant turnoff for a lot of people, I think. And they don't have that requirement in any other genre of fighting sport. You don't have it in boxing. You don't have it in MMA. There's not these requirements that you're trying to understand these crazy sounding names for, you know, Mong Kong, Y Crew. It's a lot to take in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I think they would be much smarter sneaking all that stuff in on the backside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think how many people became fans of Muay Thai from watching K1 and seeing Buakaw become this amazing force to be reckoned with all those years.
Mm-hmm.
And then they followed him over when he went back to fight full rules Muay Thai again. And that's your way. Not put all that stuff out in the forefront. Let it be a little bit subtle. You don't have to have, you know, the commentary guys on Lion Fight or every show. It's almost painful how they hammer home all the names. Look, we know the names of these things, and it's obligatory than anything else. It doesn't really captivate your attention. Mm-hmm. It makes it, let's knock these things out real quick and talk about them. And not everybody does it, so it makes it seem a little strange. Like, I think on one of the last Lion Fights I watched, it was supposed to be Muay Thai versus MMA or something like that. So, you know, the Thai guys came out and did their stuff, and then the MMA guys didn't do any of it. So it's, I think that if Muay Thai wants to make it a more mainstream TV product, they have to make adaptations. And I think Thailand realizes that as well. I mean, if you look at a program like Thai Fight, what did they do? They took the 5-round fights and they dropped it down to 3-round fights, just like Glory and just like K1.
Mm-hmm.
What did they cut out of all the broadcast? There's no Y Crew on the broadcast. That's from Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that we're noticing is that we have already came to the table on Spike TV with the best athletes in the world, and we're getting, you know, good ratings, but not 1 million viewer ratings.
Mm-hmm.
So then what happens? You get pressure from the network to say, what if we could get celebrities involved in this? What if we could get this or that? The UFC has that pressure. Yeah. Let's get a WWE guy. You know, they have pressure to do something different from what they want to do for their sport to make more eyes see the product.
Mm-hmm.
Is that why they brought Mike Tyson on to the last Glory?
For sure. Absolutely.
I mean, I think, you know, and it's very true. I think bringing up Thai Fight, and this is something we spoke recently with Timo Ruga from Muay Thai, who he's currently in Thailand, and he covers the Muay Thai scene in Thailand, and he's seen the growth of Thai Fight as well. And he's even said, and it's one of the things he said as well is he goes, at the end of the day, people have to realize that Muay Thai is also a business, and the Thais are getting to know that as well. And they're seeing how these fighters that were used to be just homegrown guys and, you know, staying in Thailand, you know, your Buakaw, your Sanchai, now Pakorn, Pornsane, all these guys that were specifically just guys that were in Thailand, and then they moved out of Thailand and the sport started getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And in order for it to get bigger, I think in a lot of ways, I would say Thai Fight has followed the K1 model, they came before Glory, but has sort of followed that idea. And it is worked for them. And as I said, it pains me to say it sometimes, because that real traditional part of me wants to sort of keep all of those little aspects that are really that are important to Thai boxing. But I think, as you said, I've always said, you know, it's, I guess we can always culturally educate people about those little things afterwards. And if they want to latch onto them and they want to get more into the real Muay Thai and in the in-depths of the culture, then they'll do it after the fact instead of, you know, us kind of having to shove it down their throat, and they're probably not going to want to watch it anymore. Yeah. And I think Glory is doing a really good job because it's always, I mean, Dutch kickboxing, I'll tell you the truth. I mean, I watch a Lion Fight show and I love Lion Fight and I love the full Thai rules. But there's just something, me being an American, there's something about Glory that when it turns on and there's, you know, all the lights and all the, you know, the hoopla and everything going on around it and obviously the money that they're pouring into it and the production and the promotion of it, it's really going, I think it really is doing it the correct way. And I hope it continues to grow, but I hope Lion Fight also continues to grow. But I think there's things they need to follow. And I think they are doing it in order to grow both sports. And like I said, I think there should be one rule set and just stop, you know, giving everybody sort of these different ideas of, you know, this is versus MMA or this is Muay Thai. This guy's an international kickboxing guy. This guy's an American, you know, all that type of stuff, because I think it just confuses everybody. But
if you make a really simple breakdown on rule sets, you've got kickboxing and Muay Thai. Mm-hmm. Those are your options. That's it. In America, we need to look at it like that in America. Obviously, when you go to Japan and in the kickboxing sect, you've got shoot boxing comes out, and there's lots of other different options that you could, you know, throw under some kind of an umbrella. But in the USA, I think it would be a lot easier if we just said there's Muay Thai and there's kickboxing. When you get to that, then you have the problem with the reality is most amateur Muay Thai in America is really just kickboxing. Mm-hmm. Because you're not allowed a knee to the head. They're not letting them clinch for more than 5 seconds, and there's no elbows.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not Muay Thai if there's not elbows and there's not clinching going on. And so, yeah, it gets tricky. You know, I think what we've got to do is, if you could just say there's going to be two sports, one is Muay Thai and one is kickboxing, I think all amateur Muay Thai should have padded elbows and have elbows from day one for all the fights.
Oh, I agree.
I agree with that also.
It's absolutely not Muay Thai without the elbows. You're doing kickboxing for me. It's mm-hmm. It's just kickboxing. It's, you know, one of the things that Glory did that was a really important thing was expanding upon the clinch options from, say, K1. Over the years, K1 had restricted its clinching increasingly more and more and more, to where by the present day rule set, it's only one hand on the head and one knee at a time. Glory doesn't have that rule. Glory allows you to clinch with two hands, to make multiple knees, as long as you're making the attack right away. It doesn't allow rest. You're not allowed to stand there and jockey for position and unbalance the guy three or four times left and right. And then you can turn a guy and turn him directly into a knee, but you just have to attack right away. But so long as you're attacking, you're going to be able to work for 5 seconds, and that's at the referee's discretion. So maybe it's 6 seconds, maybe it's 4 seconds, but you're going to be able to work a more traditional knee attack from a clinch. Mm-hmm. So when that happens, the sports are so similar now on the amateur level that if you're going to Muay Thai now, you're going to allow guys to clinch for 5 seconds, but they can't elbow. And then in the other ring, you've got Glory rules. It's the same. You don't need to have, it's redundant. So I think the WK needs to make all of their Muay Thai have elbows. I think the TBA should go ahead and open up elbows for their novice division as well. I think if the ICAF is going to have a Muay Thai division, it needs to be full rules Muay Thai as well. And all that stuff, of course, comes back to athletic commissions. You've got to go and go to the trouble of getting those things overturned there. I don't know if that's going to be my
opinion. All right. So you said you don't think it's going to happen anytime soon with that, though?
No, I don't think so. I think the bigger problem we have is not just convincing the powers that be within our sports, but now you've got every individual state has their own rule sets. And the process to overturn those rules in every state is completely different. You guys are in Florida. I'm pretty certain Florida does not allow elbows for amateur kickboxing fights.
Yeah, Florida's got a lot of problems.
Right. They also don't allow it here in Kentucky. They don't allow it. However, in amateur MMA, they're knee to the face, which is even more dangerous in my opinion. Elbows, it's crazy. But that shows the crazy structure of rules that exist in every state across the country. Mm-hmm. So now you're going to have to try to find a way to change all of those things. And there's no money in it, first of all. So the states don't spend time pushing legislation that doesn't even have money behind it. So it's not something that's going to change right away. I think that the simple would be like at the TBA level. The TBA has a unique position because in Iowa, they are their own regulatory body, and they don't have to go through the state. So whatever rules they want are theirs. So I think they could take a step and say, hey, we're going to be Muay Thai from day one on. So the novices, everybody's going to have elbow pads on. And they're pretty close to that. I think in a few years, they'll have full rules all the way through. And I think that the WK could probably do that. I've seen those guys have elbow pads at those tournaments. So I think if you start those changes that way, it becomes a lot easier to one by one by one pick off.
Well, I'm actually in New York, and I've seen recently at some of the events I've gone to that they've had, for some reason, some of the amateurs are full Muay Thai rules and some aren't.
Yeah, because in New York, those guys can negotiate by their camp what rules they want to fight. So it just perpetuates the idea that, you know, we're all Muay Thai fighters, except some of us are fighting with elbows and some of us aren't. So it's kickboxing for me. That's just kickboxing.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with that. I agree with what you're saying. If you want to fight Muay Thai rules, then fight full Muay Thai rules. If not, then fight kickboxing rules.
Yep. I think it cleans things up a little bit if you do it that way.
Yeah, and it'll make the judging a little bit easier, so you don't have, you know, as many bad decisions. Perhaps, so what do you think about Glory possibly? Do you think that there's ever a chance that they'll do, you know, a mixture of some kickboxing rules, some full Muay Thai rules?
No. Glory is it's a kickboxing promotion, and we'll have some Muay Thai fighters competing under Glory rules.
Yeah.
But it's definitely never going to mix the card up.
Okay.
So, Eric, I wanted to ask you, I know that and some people don't know, but I want you to talk about it as well. So the growth of Glory, you know, like we've talked about, Glory, you know, the Dutch kickboxing scene, it's really doing well here in the U.S., and they've actually brought you on as part working with them. What exactly is your position, and what do you do with Glory to help them grow here in the States?
I am part of talent operations, and that's led by Corey Hemmers, who is the head of talent operations.
Mm-hmm.
And there's four gentlemen in that group, just two other Dutch guys, and then Core, and then myself. And I'm the only North American, so I pretty much handle all of North America. So I'm responsible for signing and negotiating all the contracts for all the North talent. I'm responsible for matchmaking. I'm responsible for, it's kind of a catch-all. I mean, everything that would fall into, you know, anything to do with the fighters' development, scouting for new potential guys. And then on top of that, we do all the matchmaking. So just about every day, Core and I are on a Skype call, and we're backing off matchmaking for the events. And we usually try to do three events out at a time. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do. That's what my job is with Glory.
Do you think that the way that UFC has the Ultimate Fighter, like that reality show, do you think if Glory did something to that same effect that it would help it grow a little bit quicker?
Yeah, I think I've said all along since, you know, they brought me in the very beginning, just before the very first Glory event. And the very first thing I told them in one of the conference calls was, we've got to go to reality TV. It's just not so easy to do. I mean, there's not like a big red carpet being rolled out for anybody to make a kickboxing reality TV show.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, like, this is something we actually, when we spoke with Timo a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about how drama, you know, the Americans, we love it. And he said, well, Thais do too, but nobody's actually done anything. Because he said something funny, which was that Thais usually, if something works somewhere else, then they'll take that and then they'll start implementing it. So he was like, it's up to us. And he actually said that in the last podcast that we had. He said, it's up to us, maybe in the West, to do something like this, something groundbreaking, like a reality show, but for kickboxing. And then they'll probably do something similar in Thailand, because he's like, they do love drama. They love all that stuff, which is why Thai Fight has kind of grown, because it's brought in more celebrities and it's kind of brought more glitz and glamour to Muay Thai, which was completely non-existent before, because it was pretty much people in the stadiums, and sometimes to the common Thai folk, to some people, the stadiums were a little bit dodgy and, you know, kind of, you know, seedy. It's a different style, a different kind of like the underworld kind of thing. And but now Thai Fight has brought in that sort of glitz and glamour. And I really think, and I believe it too, that I see here in the United States with how just MMA exploded because of the Ultimate Fighter. I mean, I really feel that that's the reason we are where we are right now in MMA, is because
there's no doubt,
is because of the Ultimate Fighter. And I think in Glory, to me, the only issue, and I think you're gonna say that as well, and you're gonna agree with that as well. One of the issues that's gonna be difficult, I would say, with Glory, is that the talent that you guys have in Glory already, a lot of these guys, English is not their first language. They don't live here in the States. So I think the logistics is going to be a little bit hard to deal with in bringing some Americans, some Dutch, some, you know, somebody from Suriname, somebody from Russia. I don't know how that would work, but I think it's a great idea, and I think it would do wonders for kickboxing.
Yeah, I think that if the ratings can stabilize and continue to increase, then the options for us, there's been so many different paths that we've set our sights on, only to hit a speed bump and then falter in the TV ratings. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the last year, we started off closing out the year in December with the highest rated shows from Japan. Mm-hmm. And then there's a big gap before we came back. And the ratings kind of reset themselves back at the bottom again. Mm-hmm. Now we've kind of picked ourselves back up, got a good game plan, got a better strategy going forward. And now we just had this last show. It's our second highest ratings ever. Mm-hmm. And now we already have a date set for the next two events. And I think that's the key. Once we can sustain ourselves for 1 year with regular programming and keep climbing the needle with the ratings, then it gives us a little leverage to talk to a network and say, hey, we want to do more programming. We want to do, you know, a reality show as anchor. We want to have some other events. But right now, because MMA is such a powerhouse in the USA, there's not really a big – Spike's not really open to a whole lot of extra programming.
Yeah.
We have to earn that spot first.
Correct.
They have their own product there as well with Bellator. Mm-hmm. I think their plan is really ingenious. They're going to become like this combat sports hub. It's really a good idea, I think, the UFC TV thing with Fight Pass. You know, when you go to Fight Pass, they have all these various martial arts programming that you can watch. And now Spike TV's decided, what are they going to have? Every Friday night, there's going to be boxing, Glory, or Bellator. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting, novel idea. So I think for us, it's just a matter of get the ratings. Then we can figure out where to go from there. Mm-hmm. But there's no doubt. I mean, in the USA, people want to be fans of sports they know something about. And it's really hard to know anything about kickboxing. Most of the guys are not from America. The few Americans we have are still babies. They're relatively unknown. And the biggest stars in our sport, nobody knows anything about them. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to know the history of those guys. And so, you know, MMA took off and really got popular because, you know, it's so new. You could be a guy that's 40 years old and you saw every single UFC that was ever on pay-per-view. That's not the case with the history of kickboxing. Most people didn't see any of the K-1s, or let alone all the Glories. So we've got to educate the fans of who the players are, what their personalities are about, get them to become fans of those guys.
You know, another thing that we discussed with Timo, and I think that's interesting, is that obviously we have our stars here. I mean, and I think I'm looking at more of this as from the American perspective, because you have in the United States right now, you have, I would say, the American star. You know, I'm going to venture out and say the singular American star that you have in Glory is Joe Schilling, and really is the only one that is, I guess, would bring in all the large amount of American ratings. But what are the plans to Glory? I mean, I know you guys were doing the Road to Glory to try to get new talent. And one thing that we spoke with Timo is that he was saying that even in Thailand, some of the people know some of the bigger stars, people like Buakaw, you know, people like Sanchai that are legends. But they don't. A lot of the smaller guys coming up in the stadiums, nobody really knows about them, even in Thailand. I mean, we're even talking about Muay Thai struggling in Thailand to get stars out. Yep, What is Glory doing or planning on doing to sort of bring in? And I guess this would fall more under your roof, because when it comes to North America, you know, do you see, is there a large pool of American talent for Glory kickboxing? I mean, are you trying to find them? I mean, are you finding it difficult?
That's going to be one of our big challenges. Mm-hmm. Because really, if you're going to find guys that are going to compete at the highest level of kickboxing, you're going to have guys that they're not going to get all of that experience in the highest league there is. They're going to have to come from other leagues. Mm-hmm. The problem is, right now in the USA, what other kickboxing leagues are there? There's one.
Yeah.
And he's only done one show so far. Mm-hmm. Legacy.
Correct.
With Mick Maynard in Houston. What Mick's doing is pivotal. It's pivotal for the future of Glory because smaller leagues for these guys to get experience under those rules. You know, the biggest problem is we get a lot of really good Nong Muay coming over. You know, guys that are American fighters.
Yeah.
And they're terrible at kickboxing. They could maybe become good at kickboxing, but they need to go somewhere and kickbox. And with Glory, we have limited space on a card because both portions of our shows are made for television. We're not capable of building up new guys on TV.
Yeah.
Nobody watched that happen. Mm-hmm. So we really need more leagues like Legacy. We need Legacy to really secure its spot and become a feeder league. I have a lot of trouble with my guys. I've got, you know, Adam Edgerton now has 31 fights. Mm-hmm. He just got back from Holland. He spent a month over there training with Robin Van Roosmalen. And obviously, he's a kickboxer. He wants to do kickboxing. He has just as many Muay Thai fights in his career so far. Boxing fights, because we have to take all of the fights that we can get to stay active. Mm-hmm. But I can't find him a kickboxing fight right now. There's only, you know, there's Friday night fights. It's Muay Thai. The TBA tournament coming up will be Muay Thai. So the next time he'll theoretically be able to kickbox would be at the WKA tournament, and that's whoever might happen upon his division in the Glory Rules division.
Yeah.
But outside of that, there are no other kickboxing fights. So how do these young guys get kickboxing fights and learn to fight at that pace, at that style, and get good at it? And that's the problem that America has.
Eric, sorry to interrupt, but I think there's there's another smaller kickboxing show, not on, you know, the level of Legacy where it's televised, but for more, I guess, on an amateur level in New Jersey. It's called Trinity Kickboxing. It's put on by John Narleski.
So that's good, but we need a lot more than those guys. I think I've heard of Trinity. I think it's mostly local fights, just fighters mm-hmm. from that area, and that's what it takes. But we would need a local fight promoter like that in L.A., in Nevada. We need somebody. You know, every state's going to need somebody that amateurs could get kickboxing experience. But most of the bouts that are out there are under Thai rules, even if it's modified Thai rules, it's still not kickboxing rules. So that's the big challenge for Glory going forward is, and I think that in this case, instead of from the bottom up, the top down, I think if Glory can really, you already see it. I mean, the success of Glory inspired Mick Maynard to start Legacy Kickboxing. And then I was just there at his event with two fighters, and it was absolutely outstanding event. And I think his success will then start to inspire other smaller promoters to pop up, where guys can almost have a circuit where they can just focus on kickboxing. Just like there's plenty of guys that are only focusing on Muay Thai. There's plenty of Muay Thai fighters that won't take kickboxing fights because they don't want to. Then they should have that option. They should have the ability within their sport to stream things if they want, or if they want, you know, for my guys, I want them to fight all the rules because we can fight twice as much and have way more opportunities.
Mm-hmm. I guess moving on from there, one of the last things I wanted to talk about in the sense of your opinion on this, because I know you've spoken about it before many times, and I've seen you write about it on your Facebook page. Obviously, there's not a right or wrong time to go pro, but I really think there is, in the sense that I see a lot of guys that maybe do 7 or 8 kickboxing fights, they have a couple of grappling fights, and then they go immediately and then they fight pro, or they go into MMA and they fight pro, or even guys that are kickboxing, they're like talking about how they want to go to fight Lion Fight or to do pro in Muay Thai or Glory, but they've only done 6 or 7 fights. And I think that happens a lot to do with what you're saying, because Florida, we have this issue where it's pretty much once in a blue moon, you're going to have a Muay Thai event. And so the guys right down here, you know, really the only thing you can wait for is IKF, you know, yep. And then besides that, you're going to have these small local shows that are going to have the same exact problem because it's so many different styles of fighting. I mean, we even have, you know, some that are technically point kickboxing, but they're not really point kickboxing. I mean, they go all out, but they score it as if it was a point kickboxing fight, and it's on a mat. It's almost like a smoker, but it's not, you know, what we need. And basically, you have guys doing 8 or 9 of those, and then they think, oh, they can go pro. And how do you think an American young, like a young American kid, how does he make his way into the pro ranks? I mean, that happened to me when I was trying to go get more fights, and you know this because, you know, I spoke with you at that time and you took me to Suriname and helped me out with that idea. But it was very hard as a heavyweight. For me, it was very hard to find anything after those fights, and after fighting guys like Brian as an amateur, it was very difficult to find anything else, you know?
Right, right.
So,
It's that's the big challenge. I mean, I guess the thing that's the craziest for me is to see so many of these guys that are so eager to go pro, and that their teams and coaches are on board with it. Mm-hmm. That it just kind of, it screams to me lack of experience on everybody's part. Mm-hmm. Because there's two ways that you're going to make it to professional and be competitive. One way is you stay amateur as long as you possibly can and fight as often as you can. Mm-hmm. And get as many fights till you absolutely have no other option to go pro. Or you're a phenom. That's generally not the case because we don't seem to have very many phenoms coming out of America.
Yeah.
So most of the guys go pro too soon, even guys that had a lot of potential, and then you never hear about them again. They just kind of drift into nothing. There's just nowhere to go. If you don't have a local promotion of your own, you know, like if you look at Lion Fight, I mean, most of the Lion Fight events, they're kind of redundant. There's a lot of the same names over and over and over and over. Mm-hmm. They're tied in. Those guys are tied in. If you're not one of those guys, what do you do? Where do you fight? If you live in New York and you can sell a lot of tickets, you can fight on Friday night fights. But, you know, that's it. That's it. And that's regional stuff. And it's all still only based if you can sell a lot of tickets. What our strategy is we ride the amateur career until the wheels fall off. Yeah. Until there's nowhere to go. And we attack it super aggressive. I mean, Adam had his first fight in 2010. He's got 31 fights now. He's got four fights international. So by the time this kid goes pro, probably sometime in 2016, he'll probably get 45 fights. He'll have probably 6 to 8 fights international before he's a pro. And what that means is then he's going to be able to take a little bit bigger steps in the pro ranks. Mm-hmm. Because since there's so few opportunities, you're not going to get this nice pro career like in boxing where the 0-0 pro fights the 0-0 pro, and then your next fight you fight the 1-0 guy, and then you bump up to the guy that's 2-3, and you have this nice impression. In kickboxing, and you can see this in Lion with some of the East Coast shows, it's like a guy with 6 fights to tie with 140 fights.
Yeah.
Big jump all of a sudden. How the hell did that happen? There were no other stepping stones for those guys to take. I want my guys to have as much experience as they can before they get tossed into that those bigger and bigger, steeper jumps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, it's just I see it too. It's just this eagerness to go pro, and I think the thing is, I started. You know, at one point, I would say when I was younger, at one point I thought that too. I mean, I had maybe like 6, 7, 8, 9 fights and I was like, oh, you know, I'm doing really well. And I was undefeated for like 7 of them. But who was I fighting? You know, and where was I fighting? And, you know, at the end of the day, man, I think when I went to Suriname or I went fought guys like Brian, and then I was like, okay, you know, these are the real deal guys. But how many of those guys would I, you know, realistically be able to fight? And that's the thing with these younger guys that you're saying that are coming up. Because what happens is once a guy has, I have a problem with a student that I have right now. Like, he's basically wiping the floor with a lot of kids, you know, 10, he's got 10, 11 fights. But where does he go from there, you know? And because some people then stop taking fights because they have guys that are maybe 3-0, 2-0. They don't [S2] Right. [S1] Want to fight those guys or those guys don't want their guy to, you know, fight my guy. You know, so it's almost like, you know, where do they go from there? And I completely agree because I would love to have them fight, you know, 30, 40, 50 times before they ever got in the ring. But it's just very difficult. And I think that, as you say, needs to grow so that you can start feeding those guys into organizations that are bigger and eventually like Legacy and then go into something like a Glory. And we don't have
that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's I think, good one of those things that perfect world, it would start from the bottom up, right? Mm-hmm. We'd have quality gyms that made really good fighters. We'd have lots of small promotions that fed into larger promotions that fed into the top.
Yeah.
But in the USA, we're going to have to do it backwards. I think what's going to have to happen is maybe something like Glory gets big enough. I hope Lion Fight continues to grow and gets big enough. And then from their success, other promoters and smaller regional shows take more chances. I mean, I know when Ultimate Fighter really blew up, there was suddenly were MMA fights everywhere. Every city had tons of MMA fights. That was the same thing. That wasn't from the ground up. That was from the top. The success, the overnight success of the UFC reality show meant every promoter wanted to throw his hat into the arena and promote MMA fights in their city.
Yeah.
So it came a lot of garbage, but it also came a lot of opportunities, and the really, really bad ones got sorted out. So I'm hoping that the success of both Lion Fight and Glory and Legacy is going to lead to smaller events, more frequent, with more opportunities for fighters. I hope. I mean, that's really the biggest thing that's going to hold America, for there to be players that can step into these spots.
Yeah. All right. So, Eric, I mean, with all that said and everything that you've told us, what do you think is your overall outlook as you, as Eric Haycraft, in your personal opinion? Do you think that we're heading in a positive direction? I mean, I know there's a lot of things to overcome, but I think we're headed in a pretty good direction, but still there's a lot of work to do, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can't ever in my adult life, when I've had a DVR full of more kickboxing and Muay Thai as I do now. Mm-hmm. So it's the access is here. I mean, I can tell you when I was coming up, it was I had contacts in Japan, I had contacts in Europe, and we would track down the latest K1 events, and they would send me over a VHS, and it would take a month and a half, and that was like a big deal. Like a month was nothing. It's like, look how fresh this is.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I've got on my DVR right now, Glory. I've got about 50 It's Showtime events that are repeating constantly. Mm-hmm. I've got all the Lion fights on there. I mean, there's more programming produced in America than there's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
If we can sustain that, if we can be creative enough with the matchmaking in all of those leagues to bring along these American fighters so that we have some homegrown talents put into the mix, then it starts to have a little bit of a snowball effect, and we start seeing more and more smaller promotions pop up around the country, and more gyms that are, you know, I think there's a lot of athletes that might normally jump to MMA would now have an opportunity to stay in a striking sport and either pursue a career in Muay Thai or a career in kickboxing or pursue fighting in both of those leagues. So, I'm very optimistic for the future.
All right. All right, guys. So thank you very much, Eric. Thank you very much for joining us. I really think you've done a lot in helping people understand the growth of the sport and how we continue to grow it. Although there are challenges, I definitely think we need to stick it out. And I think that we're definitely headed in the right direction, and I only hope things grow from here. So in conclusion, thank you everyone for listening once again to The Striking Corner. You can, as always, check us out at MuayThaiIsLife.com. We have a couple of announcements coming soon, so stay tuned on our Facebook website, or basically our Facebook site at facebook.com/MuayThaiIsLife. There are a couple of new things that me and Vinny are working on to continue to grow The Striking Corner and Muay Thai Is Life. And so you can check us out, like I said, facebook.com/MuayThaiIsLife. Also at MuayThaiIsLife.com. You can contact me personally, EricRD1982. That's on Twitter. You can also check us out on Twitter at MuayThaiIsLife and on Instagram @_MuayThaiIsLife. Vinny, how can they get in touch with you?
The best way is through email, which is Vinny, V-I-N-N-Y, @StrikingCorner.com.
All right, and Eric, is there any way they can get in touch with you or to check out the website for Real Fighters?
Yeah, realfightersgym.com. It's got links to there, and of course we're on Facebook and all that good stuff as well, so I'm easy to find.
All right, so thanks again for joining us, Eric. It was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for spreading your knowledge and helping us understand the Dutch kickboxing glory world and the growth of the sport here in the United States. We thank you very much for joining us, man.
I appreciate it, guys. I'm a big fan. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Striking Corner, your source for Muay Thai and kickboxing news worldwide.